Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. It's Monday and a fantastic day with some cool weather and a lot of moisture. I understand the northern part of New Mexico has seen some rain and snow, so we're excited the Lord is blessing us with that. We're joined in studio today by Dr. Brian Nixon. He's an associate pastor, and he oversees the publishing and educational departments at Calvary Albuquerque. Brian, welcome.
Great to be with you again, Jim, as always, and I concur. Beautiful day. I think this is probably our first real day. It feels like, okay, fall is here.
And that's one of the reasons I love New Mexico, is because we have the four seasons.
Right.
And off air, we were talking about the many beautiful places.
Yeah.
Yesterday I had the fortune of going up, with my friend to, Tent Rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably beautiful day, 70 degrees, really unusual formations up there.
Beautiful.
And
yeah.
It's always funny to me to read that 6 to 13 million years ago, they project this stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
Some type of volcanic event that formed those cliffs. And of course, they always have to mention evolution.
Right.
And I'm fascinated why that is, Brian, because, you know, we meet frequently with Ray Mondragon with the mm-hmm. Creation Science Fellowship. That's a group of scientists and engineers that
right.
get together the third Tuesday of every month to talk about this very subject with all kinds of different Christian people
sure.
who just want to get the information. I've shared some of that information with you, Brian, and I will say this. Brian, I always enjoy people like yourself that can do six things at one time because I am not one of those people. So it's fascinating to me that you're editing the latest book by Skip Heitzig and you're running around trying to organize some educational things going on. You're on the radio on KMKT. Any other things you're doing?
Oh, I'm doing a lot. I'm actually finishing up my own book and I've got an art exhibit around the corner. The Norbertine Abbey here
uh-huh.
puts on what's called Art at the Abbey. And they've chosen some of my artwork the past 2 years. So yeah, I've got my fingers in different stuff.
And you're also a musician.
That's right.
Now, you have three children. Are you passing some of these interests and things on to them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My oldest son, he's a musician and he plays, helps lead worship at his church, a refuge church.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, she's really into poetry. Mm-hmm. She's finishing up her master's thesis and she's writing an epic poem as
wow.
part of that. So, and then my youngest son, he's still working. He's still figuring it out, but he loves the arts as well. So my kids do love the arts and they've grown up with the arts and, but not just the arts, you know, the full orb, you know, Christian life. So it's been fun.
Brian, and our show, ABQ Connect, we are not, quote, a religious program, but we are looking at everything in the world from a Christian worldview.
Right.
One of the things I appreciate about you is that you're always interested in looking into things that are not necessarily things that, quote, Christians are looking at
right.
or involved with. But you have this expanse of knowledge. And so we're going to start right now with,
yeah.
with talking about science and Christianity. Are they opposed to one another?
Absolutely not. They're actually complementary, Jim. Faith and reason, to put it a different way, are two sides to the same coin. And think of it this way. God wrote two books. God wrote the book of creation, the world, mm-hmm. and then he wrote the book of the Bible, the Word.
Yes.
So the Word and world are two books that God wrote. And when you think about it, God wrote the book of creation first. So science and culture deals with that aspect of God's creative work. It deals with creation and it deals with culture. And of course, scripture deals with God's specific revelation. You know, God's plan of salvation, God's dealing and interaction with people. So on one hand, you have general revelation, and that is the big picture of God's creation. And then you have specific revelation, God's word. And both of these were written by God. God's the author of both.
Mm. And it's clear that the creation reveals God.
That's right.
In his character, in his abilities, and I know I'm going off scripture a little bit, but don't we sometimes seem to minimize God like he's a lot smaller than he really is?
Unquestionably. I think even Christians, the people who have the, you know, the insight into the incarnation, God in human form in Christ. Even Christians limit God. You know, we just go, oh, God's, he's in a box. We put him in a box, or he's limited on this. When God's saying, try me. I'm a lot bigger than what you seem to think. So yeah, God is, he's immense. He's profound. He's beyond our ability to compartmentalize him. And that's one of the beautiful things. We will spend all of eternity, Jim, still unpacking the wonder of God. You know, a lot of people would say, you know, heaven sounds boring. You know what? I'm just up there playing harp or singing. That just sounds boring to me. And I go, well, I don't really think that's an accurate picture of heaven. Sure, there will be worship and there will be parts of that, but we will have all eternity unpacking and discovering the grandiose nature of who God is. You know, just think of what limited knowledge we know now. I mean, and we think as human beings we know a lot, but there's so much more we don't know. And we're going to have all eternity figuring out what we don't know.
You know what I think I'm going to enjoy a lot about heaven is I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch a person like yourself. I don't know you real well except from our programs. And I'm going to watch my friend Skip Heitzig, who is also inquisitive like you are. And I think that's why you guys get along so well, because you're always asking questions. And you two are going to sit back when you get back to heaven. Well, I shouldn't say you're going to sit back. You are going to be running around like kids at an Easter egg hunt, finding all the answers of stuff that you have never been able to answer while you're on earth.
Sure. I think that's going to be part of the fun of heaven is, again, just continually understanding God. Because even when we're in heaven, we're not going to have complete knowledge. There's only one who has complete knowledge, and that's God. Mm-hmm. But we will be striving. We'll be working to understand. And we're going to, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians, we will, now we see as a child, but one day we're going to see greater. But that doesn't mean we're going to be on par with God. We'll never be God.
Right.
So it will be fun.
Talk to me about evolution. Is it categorized as a science?
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, in today's day and age, it is categorized as a science. And in many universities throughout the world, it is dogma. Meaning, if you don't believe in evolution and you don't support an evolutionary worldview, you will have a very short tenure, you know, at certain universities. So it is categorized as a science. But we need to note something about evolution, Jim. And that is, it is a scientific theory. And it's not a verified fact of reality. That's why we still call it the evolution of scientific theory. A theory is a supposition or a system of ideas intended to explain something. So in the case of evolution, it's trying to explain where existence and more specifically where life came from. So it is a theory. But here's something else we need to understand, Jim, is that when we talk about evolution, we really have to parse it into two sections. On one hand, there's something called macroevolution. And macroevolution is the transition from one species to another. It happens on a scale that transcends the boundaries of one species. So as an example, from fish to furry creatures, let's say. Mm-hmm. You know, once it was a fish, and now it's a furry creature. Now that is what we'd call macroevolution. But there's also microevolution, and microevolution happens on a small scale within a single populations of animals. So example, there's big dogs. You have, let's say, a Great Dane. You have small dogs. Still dogs, still within a species, but you have themes and variations within that species. You get the same thing with birds. So here's the thing I think we need to realize. On the broad scale, no one, Christians included, should deny microevolution. We see it. We see big dogs. We see small dogs. There's themes and variations within a species. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, you're tall.
Yes.
If we bring someone else in here, they may not be as tall as you, but that's themes and variations within our species. Mm-hmm. So microevolution, we see elements of that.
Unfortunately, my abdominals are mutating as we speak.
Yeah, it's true. But you're a classic example of, you know, someone, you know, tall, and then you get someone short. But here's my point. We don't have the evidence to support macroevolution. We don't have sufficient evidence of transitory species, or what we'd like to call the missing link. So on one hand, we could say, oh, yeah, we have themes and variations within a species, But we have no major conclusive evidence of species transitioning into the other one. So if someone asks me, do you believe in evolution? I'll usually say, well, what do you mean by evolution? I mean, do you mean it as jumping from one species to the other? I would say unequivocally, I don't. And then they'd say, well, why? I would say, well, I just don't think the evidence is there. Now, if they mean, well, do you mean transitions within a species? Like you could get tall people and short people. And I go, well, emphatically, I believe that because the evidence is around us. Mm. So with classic Darwinian evolution, you need both macro evolution and micro evolution working in conjunction. But as I pointed out, we don't have the evidence, the sufficient evidence for macroevolution. So here's what the, you know, many scientists are concluding. Though there's many who adhere to macroevolution, it's a theory in crisis.
We're going to talk about, I'm going to ask you the question directly, what is the crisis when we get back? Let's take a break from our sponsors. We appreciate them so much. Stay with us on KNKT. This is ABQ Connect.
A time to rejoice for the team at Ramos Real Estate. Elaine Ramos is celebrating 5 years as the qualifying broker at Ramos Real Estate and 13 years of serving the community with her professional real estate knowledge. In appreciation, she's offering a $500 client credit towards closing costs. And team member Eleanor Hutt at Waterstone Mortgage is offering an additional $500 towards closing costs for all sales through December 31st, 2019. Take advantage of this wonderful gift.
I am Elaine from Ramos Real Estate. I am so grateful and thank you.
You are cordially invited to attend Albuquerque Christian Children's Home annual holiday affair, benefit dinner, and auction Saturday night, November 16th at Embassy Suites Hotel in Albuquerque. Bid on items in the silent auction from 5 to 6:30 with dinner with live auction to follow. Tickets are available now by calling 898-5520. That's 898-5520. All proceeds to benefit Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, providing care for at-risk children since 1970. Details online at acchkids.org.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned, children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a safe haven for these children by making a tax-deductible donation online at acchkids.org or by calling us at 898-5520.
Hello, friends. My name is Brian Allard. I'm the president of America Praise and New Mexico Praise. I want to invite you and your family to join us at the Albuquerque Convention Center on Saturday, November 2nd at 10 a.m. for Convoy of Hope. We would love to partner with you to bless our community with over $1 million worth of goods and services, including free groceries, shoes for kids, haircuts, family portraits, and lunch from Chick-fil-A. No ID required. Visit convoy.org/Albuquerque.
Listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
From the Power Ford Studios, Faith Family Ford, Power Ford, Dr. Brian Nixon with us in studio today, and we're talking about evolution and Christianity. And Brian's one of those guys that he is very gentle-spirited and very knowledgeable about how to answer questions. And I would love any of our listeners to give Brian a call. If you want to talk with Brian this afternoon, our phone number is 505-338-5790. And if you call, I also have some free Lobo women's basketball tickets. They play Wednesday against Eastern New Mexico, the Greyhounds, Lobo women's basketball. They had a pretty easy time against the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. They won 103-54 over the weekend. So if you would like two tickets to Lobo women's basketball and you have a question about anything, not just about evolution and Christianity, but as Christians, we're always asking questions, or at least we should be. So give us a call at 338-5790. Now back to our topic. Evolution, you mentioned before the break, is in crisis. How is it in crisis, Brian?
Well, scientist Michael Denton coined the phrase a theory in crisis. It's actually named after one of his books. And by the way, Michael Denton isn't a believer that I'm aware of. He's just a scientist who started to really delve into classic Darwinian evolution. And what he discovered is there are many holes within evolution. And so what he came to the conclusion is that this is really a theory in crisis. And he wrote this book many, many years ago. And interestingly enough, Jim, he republished it saying evolution is still a theory in crisis. Hmm. And so there are many, themes and variations, if you will, within evolutionary mindset. As we talked about, there's microevolution, there's macroevolution, there's classic Darwinian, there's neoevolution, and all of these guys are chiming in to try to make sense of what evolution purports to teach. But Denton's point, I think, is that the evidence is stacking up against classic Darwinian evolution. It's not a watertight theory. As we were pointing out at the beginning of the program, evolution is a theory, a scientific theory. And what Denton is saying is that it's not a watertight theory. There's problems with it.
What are some of those areas of concern?
Well, I will just skim over them, because if we were to dig deep into these, Jim, we would be there, and I think most people would turn channels because it gets very scientific. But one of the areas is cellular biology. The cells are very complex. Mm. At first, it was just like, oh, yeah, if they did this and they did this, then you'll get this. You'll transition from fish to furry animals. Now they realize that you just can't jump, like that.
They didn't understand DNA.
Exactly. Surely Darwin didn't understand DNA. He didn't have access to all of that information. Mm-hmm. And then the whole idea of biological mechanisms. In order for something to evolve or transition from one thing to another, not only do you need the right chance and probability, but there needs to be certain biological conditions or mechanisms in order for that to happen. And many times those are absent in classic Darwinian, explanations. So you have cellular biology, you have biological mechanisms, you have the chemical processes needed for things to transition in a forthright manner. You have random mutations, you have DNA, fossil record, common ancestry, the rise of language. What makes that, notable? Consciousness. What is our consciousness? How do we think? All of these questions give pause to a straightforward, what I'd call classical Darwinian understanding of evolution. And I think these are some of the things that many scientists are also coming to the conclusion is. So let me just give you a couple. A gentleman by the name of Stephen Myers, Dr. Stephen Myers. I believe he was Cambridge trained. So this isn't just like some guy from, your little hometown. Well, he is from someone's hometown, but Cambridge trained. And he wrote a book called Signature in the Cell, where he really talks about the complexity of cells. And if evolution were to happen, here's what would need to happen. And he goes, for the most part, this is very improbable. So he would, someone like him would say, it takes more faith to believe in evolution than to believe that there was a creative mind behind, creation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there are scientists like him, who are really doing, fine work in studying evolution.
As I look at history, and you know a lot more about church history than I'll ever hope to imagine, but at some point, science was made up of people that were of the faith community, and they were evaluating and asking all of these questions in a certain light.
Yeah.
At what point was there a separation?
Well, I would say the separation began, you could go back, and again, not to bore our listeners, but you could go back to the Middle Ages with a fellow by the name of Francis Bacon. And Francis Bacon was one of the first philosophers, if you will, to start leaning towards a more materialistic understanding, though he wasn't a pure materialist. He also still believed in God. But you could say he kind of turned the corner and started to lead, different philosophies away from a theistic, God-centered way. And then when you get to the Age of Enlightenment, which roughly was, let's say, 1700 to 1800, it's chock full of people that were saying, well, science has, started to disprove God. God is, we could move him out of the equation. And then when Darwin came on the scene in the 1800s, he kind of gave a scientific explanation for what all these philosophers were trying to say beforehand. So then it just snowballed after Darwin.
Who is it that made a statement that said science is now disproving God? Because I don't see anything in science that disproves God. For example, you talked about cellular biology. we all know, just a high school student that's taking freshman biology knows that you can measure with exactitude the chemical ingredients in a one-celled living organism.
Mm-hmm.
They know that you can take all of those chemicals or components over on the side in the exact amounts that they are living over here in this dish,
mm-hmm.
and you can combine them and you will never create a living cell.
Right.
However, you can borrow life from that one celled organism and get it to grow over here.
Sure.
If that doesn't prove the existence of God, I can't imagine what does.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, that's one of the problems with a materialistic science, you know, pure scientific mindset is they try to scoot out any existence of God. But there are things, questions that science could never answer. And you hit on one. How did life come from non-life? Mm-hmm. We can't replicate it in the laboratories. We have no idea from an evolutionary standpoint how it happened in the real world. So they just can't answer it. Another thing is, how did consciousness come from unconsciousness? Mm-hmm. How, you know, thoughts, imaginations. How did all this arise from that? And then how did something come from nothing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are questions that science can't answer. And that's why it goes to metaphysics or philosophy, because they could say, well, we have to deal beyond the physical realm. That's what metaphysics is. We go beyond the physical realm, and theologians pick up on it as well. So there are many questions scientists can't answer, and they will never be able to.
I have a feeling that the biggest bang anybody's going to hear is when they stand before the Creator after having talked about all of these kind of theories during their life, because they're going to know that what they believed is really not true. We've got to take a break, Brian. We'll be back more with Brian Nixon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Is there something about your house that chills you? Are there strange sounds coming from your furnace? When darkness falls, do your pipes clank and moan? Whatever it is, give the guys at Bosca Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing a call at 444-7200. Their friendly service professionals are ready to bust even the scariest of home HVAC issues. Just dial Bosque at 444-7200. That's 444-7200.
This is Steve Ryman from the KNKT Business Relations Office. Did you know that according to Simmons Research, 72% of Christian radio listeners prefer to buy from a business that advertises on their radio station? 62% say they would shop more at a known business if it advertised on Christian radio. I'll introduce your company to the KNKT listening family. Our listeners make great customers. Email me now at advertise@knkt.com. That's advertise@knkt.com. And I'll show you that KNKT means business.
It's time to power up your day with a one-minute focal point from Pastor Mike Fabares.
Want a surefire way to increase your joy? Well, then talk to other people about Jesus Christ. In Luke 15, Jesus uses three different parables to describe how heaven rejoices over one sinner who repents. That joy will also be experienced on earth by the person that shares the gospel and is witness to a life transformed by Christ. 1 Thessalonians 2:19 assures us that when Jesus comes again, our joy and our crown will be those that we brought into the kingdom of heaven. So let us not grow weary in sharing the gospel. If we celebrate people's earthly birthdays, how much more are we going to rejoice, particularly on that day when we see them enter the kingdom of God?
Get more hard-hitting, straight-up Bible teaching when you listen to Focal Point's half-hour program. Consider Pastor Mike Fabares as your personal Bible coach. He'll take you through the paces right here on this station, and listen anytime at focalpointradio.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Andrew Banks brings us back on the air. So reliable, Andrew Banks. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect this afternoon. We hope you're enjoying the cool, moist weather out here in beautiful New Mexico. Want to encourage everybody to get out and really look at our state. Brian, you've traveled extensively through the state. We have spectacular places here that people, if they're sitting on their couch, they need to get out. They're not very far away. I don't care if you live in Las Cruces or Albuquerque or Farmington. You can go to places within an hour that are just spectacular.
Yeah, New Mexico, and I've lived in a few states, three, but New Mexico truly is one of the beautiful states and truly misrepresented in the broader American, you know, culture. People think of it as a flat desert. us who live in New Mexico, we know better. Yes. And I have covered this state from corner to corner, and there are so many beautiful areas. I just love it.
Well, I can tell you, I have thrown a fly line in on most of the San Juan River up by Aztec and in southern Colorado between Durango and Pagosa. The stream fishing, everything in the northern part of the state is amazing. The lakes are beautiful. Still full of water, which is really kind of interesting. Navajo was still pretty high. I've not been down to the Butte. I understand that goes down pretty low toward the end of the summer. Mm-hmm. But again, hopefully we'll be replenishing that. It looks like we're going to have a good winter.
Let's pray.
Of moisture.
Yeah.
So let's get back now. You talked about some areas of concern, scientific areas of concern, when we consider the viability of evolution as a scientific theory. Mm-hmm. Talk about mutations as one of these areas of crisis.
Yeah, this is a big one, because mutations are simply alterations in DNA sequences that result in changes in a gene. And, you know, without getting into all the details concerning the types of mutations, by the way, there's base mutations, there's substitutions, there's deletions, there's insertions. I could dig deep. I used to dig deep in my class when I taught science. But here's a general rule for two overarching mutations, just to put it in your head. There's germline, and there's somatic mutations. And germline, or germatic, can be inherited, so passed down from offsprings, and somatic may not necessarily be passed down. So most germatic are a hindrance to a species. So let me just give you a clear-cut example using classic Darwinian examples. Let's just say a fish is in the water, and it evolved from an amoeba. You know, over millions of years, it became a fish. And let's say through...
We're being hypothetical.
We're being hypothetical. And let's just say through a mutation, it gets a little appendage on its leg that you would... Or on its body that later on, according to classic Darwinian, that may evolve because it would pass down its mutation.
Right.
Because remember, some are inherited, others are not. Those that are not inherited are not passed down. There's only one type of major mutation that's passed down. But most of those are harmful. So let's say that fish got that little appendage on its body. Is that going to be helpful or harmful to that fish?
Probably hurtful, but it won't be able to swim as effectively.
You got it. So it'll be eaten. Mm. So it will not be able to pass down its genes onward. But let's just say, being hypothetical again, Jim, let's just say the fish is able to pass down its dramatic mutation, and it's acquired, and let's say by chance the offspring grow feet. And then all of a sudden, through millions of years, that offspring is able to get out of the water. What's the problem with that picture?
Can't breathe.
Exactly. Can't breathe. It can't see. Its mind is not set for out-of-water experience. So all of these mutations have to be fine-tuned in order for that organism to exit the water. So a chanceless, or, you know, a probable thing of all these mutations working in conjunction for that organism is so improbable that it almost becomes impossible.
So you can give all of these, this list of 20 things that have to happen. Maybe it's 5,000 things or 20,000 things. You give that to a mathematician and say, what is the probability
they
that
have
these
done
things
that.
Could happen?
They have done that. A great British mathematician said, it is more probable for a Boeing 747 jet to be assembled during a windstorm than for evolution to happen. That's the probability. So he said, using his numbers, after punching in and doing the calculations, the probability is that a tornado or a big storm comes through and assembles a jet than it is for evolution to happen. So if you could believe that a jet could be assembled over a period of time through a tornado or strong wind, then that. My point is, these genetic mutations really are more of a hindrance than they are a help. So mutations are not that reliable, and the point is, evolution is dependent on them, Jim. Evolution is saying this is how evolution happened, but they're not that of reliable. So going back to Michael Denton, that's why he says it's a theory in crisis, because if the probability is that the mutations couldn't help the organism, but rather hinder it, what's the chances without someone or something guiding the process? And that's why there are some theistic evolutionists, people who believe that God guided the process.
Well, and we'll talk about that here in a couple segments toward the end of the program. But I want to skip back now to talking a little bit about this theory of evolution that is now taught in all of our schools, and it is taught as science. Mm-hmm. Now, I was in school a pretty long time ago. I graduated from high school in 1976. So if you work backwards, the science or the theory of evolution was taught at that time.
Sure.
So I can only imagine in the last 40 plus years, it's become even more intense. But it seems to me that there is some intellectual honesty in the science community, particularly in a couple people you've already mentioned that would have considered themselves evolutionists, but now see through actual research that its probability is pretty minimal.
Yeah, no, and I like that word or phrase, intellectual honesty. I think that's what a lot of scientists are really starting to come to conclusion. By the way, not all scientists. There's still some hardened classical Darwinian scientists who just want to dismiss God all the way. Mm. But other scientists, if they're intellectually honest, they're going to say, hey, all the evidence isn't lining up. Someone like Michael Denton, who's saying, you know, all the evidence is there. I need to be honest with the evidence before me. I need to be honest with the questions that are being posed and rethink evolution. Now, could God guide an evolutionary process? Sure, he could. Actually, that makes more sense to me, saying God guiding the biological processes versus something happening by chance. The intellectual honesty, I hope, and my prayer is that there would be more scientists who do have this open intellectual honesty.
Well, we're going to come back and talk about theistic evolution and a bunch more with Brian Nixon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We will be right back.
What would you do if you knew there was a place to learn step-by-step strategies designed to help you make the right moves inside the financial markets? A place to develop skills that can help you generate income and build confidence toward your retirement goals? At Online Trading Academy, we know there's an investor in all of us, and we know how to teach people, just like you, the skills and knowledge that could empower you to take better control of your financial future so you can spend less time worrying about life and more time living it. Start by taking our free introductory class at a location near you. Learn about the biggest mistakes investors make and how you can learn to avoid them. Plus, you'll learn strategies that could help you make your money work harder for you. For over 20 years, Online Trading Academy has been teaching students skills designed to help them learn to invest with the confidence of the pros.
Call 888-670-RSVP for two free tickets to a class in your area and receive our professional insider's kit just for attending. That's 888-670-RSVP or visit otaclass.com.
Here's Rob West with today's MoneyWise Minute.
There's a reason most of us don't wake up with $1 million when we went to bed with the change in our pockets. And it's the same reason a lot of lottery winners lose their fortunes in a very short amount of time. We don't do well managing the big things when we haven't learned to manage the small things. Luke 16:10 says, "He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much." So if you don't have much money, learn to manage what you do have. Begin saving, even if it's only a dime or a dollar a day. If you're in debt, stop whatever got you there and work your way out. If you need help, go to repaydebt.org. Wherever you are, start small so you can move up to big.
Hey, need some help getting started with this? Well, connect with a MoneyWise coach at our website, which is moneywise.org, moneywise.org.
Listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Nixon and Jim Williams in studio with you this afternoon on ABQ Connect, and I feel like we're stirring the pot a little bit. Brian, I like people to think and to really put on their thinking caps, get off the couch. Hope you're enjoying maybe some lunch or you had a great weekend and just thinking a little bit about evolution versus creationism and Christianity as a whole is a pretty interesting process.
And I think stirring the pot is the right metaphor to use, because we've been stirring the pot with evolutionists, but we now might stir the pot a little bit with even some Christians here. So because, you know, this is a very broad, all-encompassing theory.
Right. Well, let's ask the question. Can a Christian be an evolutionist?
The answer is yes. And believing in evolution is not a point of orthodoxy. So believing in evolution is not like you're denying the Trinity or you're denying that Jesus rose from the dead. It's not that. Faith in Christ is the main point of our relationship with God. So if someone has faith in Christ, they've received Christ as Savior, yet still believe in evolution, there may be a slight disconnect, but it doesn't preclude you from being a Christian. So evolution and Christianity are not necessarily mutually exclusive. However, because evolution is a point of scientific inquiry, it does deal with truth. So Christians need to be people engaged with the pursuit of truth. So it is an important topic for Christians to understand. And let me also offset this by saying there are fine Christians who are evolutionists. There are many Christians who are. Let me give you an example. B.B. Warfield, he was a systematic theologian of the last century, and he was a very well-respected Christian theologian, and he believed in evolution. Living today is a gentleman by the name of John Polkinghorne, who is a pastor and scientist living in England, and very well respected. He's an evolutionist. Francis Collins, here in the United States. A lot of people, you know, they may have heard his name in the news because he was head of the Human Genome Project. He's the one that was in charge of deciphering the genes, the DNA sequence. He's the guy that did it. Well, he's a believer. He happens to be an evolutionist, and he runs what's called the BioLogos Foundation.
Now, that's very surprising to me that somebody that knows about DNA would be an evolutionist.
Yeah, no, he's a, now I don't think he's a classic Darwinian evolutionist, but I think he's one of those. Remember, I pointed out there's a big swath of someone who would say I'm an evolutionist. So classic Darwinian evolution's on one side, and then you have something over on the other side, and he may be on the other side.
Well, you mentioned microevolution, which is how
changes within a species.
Within a species, yes.
Right, exactly. So, and then you have someone like Alistair McGrath, who's also a very prominent theologian, writer. He also is an evolutionist. But here's the shocking thing, I think, to many people. There's a lot of Christians out there who were open to evolution. Now, let me clarify. They didn't say they believed in evolution, but they said if God so chose or had chosen to create through evolution, they wouldn't be bothered by that. And let me give you a list of some of these people. C.S. Lewis was one. John Stott, the great British pastor. And then probably some who may go, oh, my gosh, really? Billy Graham.
Billy Graham.
So Billy Graham, all of these guys. Now, again, they didn't say they believed in evolution.
Right.
I'm not saying these guys were evolutionists, but they said if it came to the point where we discovered that God used evolution, meaning he guided the processes of mutations in order for them to go in a certain direction, they would have no problem with that. So there are many folks that do believe in evolution. And here's the point. These Christians that believed in evolution didn't see evolution as the breaking point for faith. They were open to the theories of how God created the world.
Well, it's good. It's a good thought process, because I think some of us get so zealous for standing up for our faith that we start putting all these qualifiers that you may not be a person of faith if you believe this one way. And we always have to step back and talk about the essentials of who is Lord,
right?
Who is Creator,
right?
I just can't emphasize enough that regardless of what people believe, the Bible teaches that we should honor all men.
Yeah, sure.
And extend love. And that's how the world, I think, knows that people are believers,
right?
Because they see the love that they have inside of them.
Sure.
So, and I have a lot of friends of mine that disagree. I mean, I have people that disagree with me and my Christian stance on everything from political issues to gender issues, mm-hmm. to sexual orientation, to this and that. But these people know that I love them and care about them no matter what they believe. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important thing.
It is. And that's particularly when it comes to evolution. You know, as you pointed out, Jim, there's a lot of people, if someone says, well, I'm a Christian evolutionist, we want to demonize them. Mm-hmm. And the fact is you can't, because we're called not to demonize them. And then we're called to understand, to listen to them and understand, go, oh, so you believe God guided the processes, which by evolution. Now, if someone were to ask me, are you a classic evolutionist? I'd go, absolutely not. And they'd go, well, why not? I would say, because I think the preponderance of evidence is against evolution, mm-hmm. not for it. So show me the evidence. And again, I'm not talking about the scant, you know, missing links and supposed things. Again, I'm not questioning microevolution here. I'm questioning the big swath of macroevolution. I just don't personally see the evidence stacking up in favor of evolution. Now, maybe one day I may be wrong, but right now I just can't.
What are some of the other theories of creation, Brian?
Oh boy, yeah. There are five major theories with so many sub theories. Let me just briefly give them to you, Jim, and I don't mean to bore our audience here, but there's the literalist theory. That literalists believe in 6 24-hour days. So if you believe God created in 6 literal 24-hour days, that puts the earth at about 10,000 years old. Then you have what's called the day age theory. And these people believe that the word used in Hebrew, yom, for day, is an undetermined period of time. So the universe is very old. And then you have people who believe in what's called the gap theory. So the gap theory teaches that there was a gap between Genesis 1:1, verse 1, and Genesis verse 1:2, where a lot of stuff happened that God didn't explain at the beginning, but he explained later in the Bible. So gap theorists believe...
You mean that in the big inning is not about baseball?
Well, you would think. Yeah, you would think. And then you get gap theorists. I mean, theistic evolutionists, which we already pointed out. Theistic evolutionists believe that God used evolution. And then here's one of the more interesting ones. It's called the vantage point theory. So the people who believe in this say you have to interpret Genesis from the vantage point in which it's written. So God is telling Moses, communicating to Moses who wrote Genesis, I created in 6 days. So Moses records it. Well, when we turn around and look back into space-time, it's billions of years because that's how it has translated throughout space and time. So it's the vantage point theory. Other viewpoints are revelatory day theory, alternate theory, ideal time theory, literary framework, analogy, fiat. The list goes on and on and on. So the question I always get from people, knowing that there's all these different theories out there, is how do we approach them? How do we approach these theories? And I would just say you have to approach them humbly and responsibly. We must be responsible for good science and a good biblical understanding. We have to keep them both in balance. Again, it goes back to the beginning. God wrote two books.
No problem asking these questions.
No, absolutely not. God's the author of both books, and they're not going to disagree. So we have to be humble when we approach both, and we have to keep a keen eye on what is truly science, not just what's make-believe or theories, and what is truly good biblical exegesis. So here's something that, by the way, all the theories that I just listed agree with. They all agree with that in the beginning, God. Mm-hmm. All the theories have one thing in common. They believe that God created. Some may believe God created through evolution. Others may believe he did it other ways. But they all believe that God is the author of all that is. So that is the one key characteristic they share in common.
And they have a goal of trying to reconcile what we know as the Old and New Testaments with what is also known as science and what people are observing. And we have got a lot more to talk to Brian about. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. We'll be right back.
How much time do we have?
We have
depression. It's invisible. It can be devastating. And it's on the rise in America. Hopelessness is an epidemic, but that can change.
I can't tell you how many times in my life I thought the flood would overwhelm me, but Isaiah promised, if you pass through the waters, they will not overflow you.
That's Ben Corson, and concerning depression, he knows of what he speaks.
Depression is a real malady, and it's a real sickness. You know, we've gone through it, so many of us. But I think that's one of the most toxic sentences we can ever say. I'm going to live with depression. That's a bunch of bunk.
This book, Optimist Fits by Ben Corson, can be a lifeline for you or someone close to you who is struggling with depression. and we want to put it in your hands now. Let Ben Corson take you on his journey through the valley of the shadow and out into the sunshine of hope.
When you kneel before God, God will stand up for you.
Optimist Bits is yours for a generous donation of $35 or more today. Your support helps keep these teachings on air to connect more people to Jesus. So call now to give 800-922-1888 or give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer.
We can change the world with the words we say. Hi, I'm Lisa Turkers with Proverbs 31 Ministries. One day, I was eating in a restaurant, and every time our server came to the table, she had something really kind to say. I was amazed by her gracious attitude, and I found it was quite contagious. So I challenged myself to make a conscious effort to use my words as a gift to each person that I came in contact with the rest of that day. You know, in a world that promotes tearing others down to build ourselves up, we can make a difference by using our words to bless and encourage. Let's look at those who we come in contact with today as people who really need a kind word or two. I've found that giving kind words, it's one of the greatest ways to make the love of Jesus known to so many who desperately need it. For more, visit Proverbs31.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for staying with us on ABQ Connect this afternoon. It's a beautiful Monday in New Mexico, a little bit of wind, but kind of cooler temperatures. Got some rain and snow. And I've mentioned this every time we come back because I just like it. You know, it was 70 degrees yesterday, great day. But today it's down in the 50s and a little cooler. It's
classic
why we live
New Mexico,
here.
Right?
And if you're tired of the rain, just wait 5 minutes and the sun will come out, right?
That's right.
That's what the old cliche is about New Mexico. So Brian, right before our break, you talked about five major theories, alternative theories to creation science, mm-hmm. or they're actually theories of creation science.
Right, that God created the world.
Right. So let's talk now about how, if anybody listening would like to investigate that for themselves, where would they start?
Yeah, I would point out one of my former professors, obviously I'm indebted to him, but Dr. Norman Geisler. He has a one volume called Systematic Theology, and in his appendix, he gives a list of some of these theories. And in his bibliography, he would also list other books. So I would say start with Norm Geisler, just because he's always comprehensive in giving the various theories, and then he'll assess them. If you're lucky enough, you could also go online and get his single volume. The one volume of Norm Geisler, they took four volumes and compiled into one, but they left off a lot of good stuff. So I always say, go on and find the single volume commentaries, but you'd have to buy all four, which makes it more expensive. But I would start with Norm Geisler, and then you could expand from there.
Oh, this might be a really silly question, but can you go to the library and check out Norman Geisler's book?
I would hope so. I mean, you know, Norm has since went home to be with the Lord, but his books are still out there. I mean, the man wrote over or co-wrote close to 100 books. And I would think some libraries out there would have them. And with today's technology, you may be able just to download it for next to nothing on Kindle or a tablet or an iPad and start reading up on the material. So the old school book, which is still my preferable way of getting information, but there are other ways you could get it. And by the way, Norm's not the only one out there. There's other great people out there who have really wrestled with these big issues. But I just mentioned Norman because, you know, I was influenced by him.
Well, and I want to encourage our listeners. You could be over 60 like I am, or you could be under 40, or you could be just over 20, and you have these lingering questions. Don't spend time binging on Netflix.
Yeah.
Go get a book.
Yeah.
And read about this, because it is going to take some time.
That's right.
But it's so enlightening and it's so interesting. And I thank you, Brian, because I learned so much. I learned what questions to even ask and consider of myself while I'm talking. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And as you're talking about these five additional theories of creation, I didn't realize those even existed.
Yeah. There's lots of theories. And, you know, any good book, introductory book that is introducing the idea of creation usually will touch upon them. Mm-hmm. It is a contentious area, though, Jim. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people on both sides of the issue. The young earth guys always attacking the old earth attacking the young earth. And at times that's warranted, but here's my thought on that. Rather than doing it out in the open in public for people to scrutinize, I wish some of these guys would just get behind closed doors and talk and debate and dialogue. Because honestly, we share more that we hold in common than that's disagreement. And but it is one of those issues that really cause people to get very passionate about it, and they let their passions lead.
Brian, I can't help but say this to all of our politicians that might be listening. We want you to do the same thing.
Yeah.
We want you to take all the common ground issues. For example, we had Dale Armstrong and his executive director, Rhiannon Samuel, on the program, and they have a program called Vyante.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have done is they've put together people of all faiths, all kinds of different ethnicities and so forth, and they've come up with three basic things they want to do in New Mexico. They want to have a better quality of life, they want to have better education, and they want to reduce crime.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that those are bipartisan issues, and our politicians, regardless of what they believe about other things, they need to get together, vote issues that are common ground issues, do those first.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a theory. Sure, somebody might come back and argue, hey, abortion legislation is more important than fourth grade reading levels. I don't actually agree with that anymore. And the reason I don't is we argue so much about these issues that we talk about being the important issues that we never vote on the lesser issues because we take too much time arguing.
Right.
Let's get the stuff out of the way that we need to do. And I think you're talking about the same thing.
And what's cool, Jim, is that the early church did exactly what you're talking about. So a lot of people say, I wish Christians would have just got together and figured out what were the essential talking points, if you will, in your mm-hmm. case, these three points.
Sure.
The early church did that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we call the Nicene Creed. Mm-hmm. It stemmed from the Apostles' Creed and moved to the Nicene Creed. And so they outlined the points, the talking points of what it is we share in common. And so you get God the Father, Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit, the church. And that's why I say those are the non-negotiables, those things that are outlined in the Apostles' Creed, the things in the Nicene Creed. Those are what make a Christian, and not things like, do you believe in evolution or don't you believe in evolution? Though, very important.
Yes.
Mind you, I'm a full advocate that we need to be engaged in dialoguing and discussing this. But what makes a Christian not is that they believe in evolution or not. It's do they adhere to these early talking points, what we would call a statement of faith, that the early church came together and decided upon.
Well, let's now go talk about the people that we know that do not believe, people that call mm-hmm. themselves atheists or they call themselves agnostic. In regard to them being evolutionists, how do you begin to talk to them about God?
Oh, that's a great question, Jim. Well, first of all, if you know science, if you personally have a fairly decent grasp on science and you can intelligently discuss it with a non-theist, then talk about it with them. I mean, be open, be engaging with them. But if you don't know a lot about science, don't go up to a scientist and start saying, you know, this, that, and the other thing, because they're going to say, well, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And if you're wrong on those things, well, you surely got to be wrong on these other things concerning God. So I would say know your strengths and weaknesses. If you have a science background, feel free to engage someone on those areas. If you don't, maybe focus on other areas that you know that you're more familiar with, about morals and ethics and things of that. Because most non-theists, generally speaking, particularly those with the scientific bent, Jim, they know more about science than your average Christian, so they'll trip you up. Mm-hmm. So I would concentrate on other questions. And let me just give you four.
Okay.
The first question is being. And I would ask an atheist or an agnostic, why is there something rather than nothing? We already mentioned this in the early broadcast, mm-hmm. but nothing can't create something. And if they go, well, there was a electric current that made do with water and life, and you're going, no, you're describing something. Mm-hmm. Electric current is there. You're describing water. I'm talking, how did nothing? Well, you see, there were these physical laws. Well, no, stop. Physical laws are something. How did nothing create something?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's impossible. We know that. It's virtually impossible. So begin there. Number two, you could bring up the idea of consciousness, awareness, thought, imagination, or even metaphysics like numbers and language. All of these things are not physical, but they're real. And science has a difficult time accounting for them. Imaginations, I can't, you know, take my imagination and say, here it is. It's metaphysical. It's beyond the physical realm, but we know it exists. What we're doing right now, Jim, is metaphysical. Right. I'm talking. When I'm talking to you, you don't see words coming out of my mouth. You know, that's a language is metaphysical. Numbers mm-hmm. are metaphysical. Numbers don't exist. Mm.
Why are we afraid to say we don't know something?
Well, it's just because we want to know. Humans are perpetually curious, so they always want to know. But scientists have a difficult time dealing with things they don't know. And so consciousness, I would bring that up with an agnostic or atheist. And then third, how can non-life create life? We've already touched on that in the program. And then the fourth question, I would just bring it back to the core center of Christianity, the resurrection, the historicity of the resurrection, the evidence that something happened in space and time that is not explainable via physics. Something happened that is only explainable by God, aka a miracle. So, to the Christian, dealing with atheists and agnostics, if you know science, okay, dabble with it. But if you don't, I'd steer clear with it. And instead, I would talk about being. Why is there something rather than nothing? Number two, consciousness. You know that there are things of metaphysics that are real, and you have no problem believing in those,
yes.
But why not believe in God? Three, how can non-life create life? Nothing inanimate can create something that's animate, as you already pointed out. And then number four, I would just cut to the heart, cut to the chase, and just address the resurrection.
Brian, I want to close our program by redirecting everybody to, I think, who is central to all of this. Tell us what we know about Jesus.
Well, we know that he lived, he died, and he rose again. We know he lived, and we know that from internal evidence, which is the scriptures, and we know that through external evidence, other people such as Tacitus, Josephus, and others who wrote about Christ and Christians. So we have the historical evidence behind the fact that Jesus lived. So he lived. We know he died. We have evidence, again, from external evidence who mentioned Jesus died. And then we have evidence, primarily internal evidence, that Jesus rose from the dead. And the internal evidence is clear. Not only did the disciples see Jesus rise, I mean, they didn't see it, but they experienced a risen Christ, but hundreds of people saw a risen Christ. So we have external evidence. And I always like to put it this way, and I think it was Josh McDowell who originally came up with a similar terminology, that, Jim, let's say you and I want to concoct a story about how we saw Martians. And we live in New Mexico. We all know Martians are here, of course. And we come up with this exact same story, and we get it down, and then we release it to the press. And the press knocks on your door, and they say, you know, tell us your story. And you tell the exact same story. And then they come to my house, and I tell the exact same story. And we get people starting to believe that there were Martians. And then all of a sudden, you get another knock on the door, and these guys come in and hold a gun to your head and say, okay, tell me. If this is what you're saying is true, and you're going to go, okay, I made it up. Why? Because you don't want to die for your faith.
Yeah. Or you don't want your family to die.
Yeah, you don't want to die for something you know to be a lie. Mm-hmm. Well, to a T, all of these disciples of Christ died. They never changed their story. Mm-hmm. They never said, okay, we were just joking. They all went to the grave based upon the evidence that Jesus rose from the dead. So something miraculous happened that's beyond explanation for them, and they all were willing to die for what they believe. John, probably the last disciple to live, he was exiled to the Isle of Patmos, and he wrote Revelation, the Gospel of John, for us. But he most scholars would say he also died, a prisoner. Never, not once, did he recant or say, okay, guys, I'm the last of you fellas around. I recant of this. It was all big fun joke game. No, he went to the grave proclaiming and believing and even wrote a gospel to propagate this. So I think the witness of the disciples, the internal evidence is so strong. I think it would require an agnostic or atheist to really do their homework.
Dr. Brian Nixon, you are always encouraging to us, my friend, giving us this plethora of knowledge. Thank you so much for joining us, and
thank
we'll see you,
Jim.
Next time.
Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.